Well, I want to talk a little bit about rules as we start out, rules. You know, I think for those of us who've been alive long enough, we know that not all rules are the same. There are some rules that make a lot of sense, and there's other rules that feel just overly restrictive, right? Like for example, overly restrictive rules. Maybe you just got a new job, and you're having to go through the employee handbook, and some of what you read makes sense, and those other ones are kind of like, really? The reporting format, like, do I have to have three different supervisors that I report to? There's certain rules that feel overly restrictive, right? Students, I've never met a kid who was a part of a school that had any kind of dress code that did not feel like the dress code was overly restrictive. It's like, come on, really? Right? Or maybe you live in a neighborhood that has an HOA, right? And then there's a whole bunch of rules, some of which feel overly restrictive, right? Not all rules are created the same, right? Now, there's other rules that I think we recognize that these rules make sense. These rules are here for a purpose. The rules are good. The rules are there to actually protect others. Now, by the way, I'm not saying that you should go out and, you know, the rules that feel overly restrictive, just do what you want. I'm just saying, I think all of us know, regardless of whether we have to submit to rules, that they're not all equal. There are some rules that we know are so important for the protection of those around us. For example, as a part of our nation, citizens have certain rights. And folks, even who aren't citizens living in our nation, they also have certain rights. And there are rules and regulations that govern how they are to be treated. And if individuals or organizations circumvent those rules, break those rules, then that is a problem. And we pray that there would be justice in these areas. There are also rules protecting how we treat one another, right? Like someone can't come up and just without any kind of consequences, violently attack you, right? There are consequences because those rules are there to protect you in those instances. We have all kinds of rules to protect children, right? We have laws about, you know, can children be employed? And if they are employed, at what age are they allowed to be employed and to work? And for how long, right? These are to protect children. There's laws about the age of consent and to protect vulnerable people, right? Well, you might wonder, why am I talking about rules, restrictive rules, and good rules? Because we're getting into a text today that I think for many of us, at first glance, we might feel like that Jesus is giving us some rules that feel a little bit overly restrictive. But my hope is that by really getting into the text, we'll see that actually these rules, even in a sensitive topic like divorce, you're paying attention to what Ann was reading today, you see that Jesus is giving rules about divorce, and you hopefully, by the end, you can see that not only is this not an overly restrictive rule, but it shows the loving, compassionate heart of God. That's the goal today as we get into the service. Let's read. We're going to have two parts of the sermon. First is going to be focused on divorce, and then the second is going to be focused on keeping our word. The bulk of the sermon is going to be focused on what Jesus says about divorce and marriage. So if by the end you're like, wow, this is going long, just trust me. The bulk of the service is talking about marriage. All right, let's read. Excuse me, Matthew 5, 31 through 32. It was also said, whoever divorces his wife must give her a written notice of divorce. But I tell you, everyone who divorces his wife, except in the case of sexual immorality, causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Okay, so this is a hard topic. And by the way, if you're just joining us today, if you're visiting with us, you might be asking, why are they preaching on this? I promise you, we don't love preaching on just super controversial topics and sensitive matters. It's not like I get a kick out of coming up here and making you uncomfortable or me being myself uncomfortable. What we do is we typically kind of go through books of the Bible. And what we've been doing for the last couple months is we've been going through Matthew chapter 5, which is the Sermon on the Mount. That's where Jesus comes up and he says things like some of these things you might recognize, like blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. You know, this is Jesus' sermon to us. And so what we're doing is we're walking through it chapter by chapter, section by section. And we just happen to be today whether you like it or not, we happen to be today on a portion where Jesus is addressing issue of marriage and divorce. And let me say this too, I would guess that none of us here have been untouched by the reality of broken marriages and divorce, right? I myself am a child of two divorced parents. And so we're coming into this with our own stories and in some cases our own pain. And so I just want to acknowledge that and honor that even as we get into this topic. And again, my hope and expectation is that through this you will see God's loving, compassionate heart even when we're going through really difficult circumstances. Okay, I'm going to say there's three things that we need to remember and understand as we really appreciate what Jesus is saying. So you see these on the slide, three things that we need to understand. First of all, we need to remember the character of Jesus. Secondly, we need to see the goodness of God's command. And finally, if we want to understand what Jesus is saying about marriage and divorce, we got to understand the historical context. Because marriage law back in the day did not function the same way it does today. And so if you listen to Jesus' commands without understanding the context into which he was speaking, it's likely that you were going to misunderstand some things, all right? Remember the character of Jesus, see the goodness of God's commands, and understand the historical context. Well, first, let's look at the character of Jesus. It's important that you consider the source when someone is telling you something, right? We appreciate that. You got to consider the source. Who's talking to you, right? So, for example, if I were to come up to an NBA professional basketball player and I were to give them some tips on how you train and function as an NBA basketball player, I have no place to do that, right? That is not functioning with my skill set, my experience, or my discipline, to be honest with you. So, like that, I'm not the person to give coaching tips to an NBA player, right? Jesus here, we got to consider the source. Jesus is saying some things that might strike us at first as difficult, as challenging, as perhaps overly restrictive. But we need to step back and consider who this Jesus is who's giving these commands. So let me tell you a story. This is a story from John chapter 4, verse 4. And you can see it on the screen. You can read along with me. Jesus had to travel through Samaria, and Jesus, worn out from his journey, sat down at a well. It was about noon. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. "Give me a drink," Jesus said to her, because his disciples had gone into town to buy food. Here's her response. "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman?" she asked him. For Jews don't associate with Samaritans. Jesus answered, "If you knew the gift of God and who is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would ask him and he would give you living water." Then she replies, verse 15, "Sir," the woman said, "give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and come back here to draw water." Jesus answered, "Go call your husband," he told her, "and then come back here." She replied, "I don't have a husband." He says, "You've answered correctly. You don't have a husband," Jesus said, "for you have had five husbands, and the man that you now have is not your husband. So what you've said is true." Then the woman said to him, "I know that the Messiah is coming." I'm skipping ahead a little bit. Basically, at that point, you can imagine, you know, Jesus kind of prophetically, he knows what's going on with this woman's life and what's going on in her heart and her struggles. And so he names it. And what do most of us do when something hard is, you know, we're confronted with? A lot of times we try to like duck out and kind of evade and like, oh, let's change the topic. So that's what she does with Jesus. Jesus kind of names this painful reality in love, as we're going to see, but he names it. And so she starts changing the subject, right? So there's this kind of interaction about like, where do we worship God? And because different, the Samaritans said one place and the Jews said another place. He cuts through that and he kind of gets to her heart. The woman said to him, "I know the Messiah is coming. And when he comes, he will explain everything to us." Jesus told her, "I, the one speaking to you, am he." And then the woman, let's see. Sorry, I thought I had the next verse. I wanted to point out the fact that, I'll just tell you how the story ends. So after this interaction, the disciples come back, she leaves, and she goes, and she tells everyone, this man knew everything about me. She was excited to tell everyone about this encounter with Jesus. And she said, he might be the Messiah. So why am I telling you this story, especially in light of Jesus' passage on divorce? What I love about this story, if you follow it through, is that here we see Jesus' compassionate heart towards those who are struggling, towards those who are broken, towards those who've had really traumatic and difficult life experiences. That's what we see here. And we know the impact, right? You might think, is Jesus being cruel? He's stepping on her toes. He's calling her out for her behavior. But we see the way in which he was doing this with love and ministering to her, because she goes away not enraged. She goes away not angry at him. She goes away excited to tell others, you've got to come and meet this man that I just met. She's so excited that she left her jar. She's going to well. The whole point of going to the well is to fill up her jar. It's the only reason she's there, is to fill up her jar. She doesn't care anymore after meeting Jesus. This is a woman who has been divorced. She's had five husbands. And she's with this man now who's not her husband. So she is the epitome of the person who's failing to live up to this command that he's giving us today. And what do we see from Jesus in this message? Do we see condemnation? Shame? No, we see compassion and love.
That's how Jesus engaged with her. Jesus didn't condemn her. He continued to engage, to teach her, to minister. Because of his kindness, compassion, holiness, and wisdom, she left changed. So here's the takeaway. As we get into this message of Jesus on rules for divorce and marriage, we need to understand that Jesus gives compassionate guidance to broken people who still need to see the goodness of God's law. So we need to remember the character of Jesus. Consider the source. Who's giving these commands? Secondly, we need to see the goodness of God's command. See, God created marriage to be a gift, right? We see that in Genesis 2, 24. This is why after God created man and a woman.
All right, so the goodness of God's command. We're talking about, you know, God's plan for marriage. So in Genesis 2, 24, he says, this is why a man leaves his father and mother, they bonds together with his wife, and they become one flesh. God, as a good gift, he first created Adam, he created Eve, he created them to enjoy the goodness of God, to enjoy his blessings, and he gave them marriage as a good gift. Now again, any of us who've lived any length of time know that we wrestle in this broken world as broken people with broken marriages, right? It is a reality. And so by speaking of the goodness of marriage, I'm not trying to, you know, bring any kind of shame or condemnation towards those who have experienced broken marriages or those who haven't experienced marriage and called to a, you know, a time of singleness. But for some people, the Lord does call marriage as a wonderful gift, and it's good. Now, a good gift must be used well, right? A good gift must be used well. One of my favorite gifts to receive at Christmas time, Father's Day, whatever, it's power tools. I love that. Now, I'm just going to say this. I'm not a great handyman, right? Not pretending I am, but power tools help me be a little bit better than I would be otherwise. You know, I can be kind of like a mid-level, lower mid, probably handyman with the right set of power tools. So I love getting power tools. Now, power tools, there's nothing wrong with them. It's a good gift for me. You give me power tools, it's a good gift. But you got to use them well, right? You don't use them well, and there's going to be lots of damage, lots of destruction going on with these power tools. You get a circular saw, you better use it well. Similarly, God gives marriage to us as a good gift. It's a wonderful gift, but there are parameters. The Lord calls us to be in a lifelong covenant, which is a committed relationship, that promotes our flourishing and enjoyment in life. That's God's design in marriage, is that this would be a lasting relationship between a husband
and wife. So even though Jesus is speaking to people who have experienced brokenness, he ministered to the woman at the well who had a multiple broken marriages. Despite all of that, there still is the importance for us to see that no matter how much brokenness and difficulties we can have, marriage itself is still a good gift. And the goal for God is that marriage would be a lifelong commitment. Okay, but here's the last thing that I want us to see. To really appreciate this portion, you got to understand the historical context. You got to understand the historical context. And here's the thing. Now, the way that marriage and divorce was practiced in the ancient world often served the man and granted him license and leniency to do whatever he wanted and punished the woman unfairly. All right, I'll say that again. The way that marriage and divorce was practiced in the ancient world often served the man and it disserved, it punished the woman. That's the context into which Jesus is speaking and teaching, all right? Let me give you some examples. Some rabbis taught that husbands could divorce their wives for any reason, right? Like the Hillel school of rabbinic thought, for example, taught that a husband could divorce his wife if she spoiled his dinner. Now, that's not a joke. It's not like, ha, 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 isn't that funny? No, it literally was there, like written down in this school of thought. That's the extreme degree to which men were giving the ability in this societal context to abuse power. Now let me be clear here. This is not God's design. It wasn't God who said, yeah, your wife spoils your dinner, you can divorce her. No, this was men twisting God's commands to serve their own selfish ends. All right? One rabbi taught that a husband could divorce his wife simply if he found another woman more beautiful. It's terrible. This is the context into which Jesus is teaching. And it was accepted also that a husband could divorce his wife, but a wife could not divorce her husband. That was reality. And even within the marriage, in many places culturally, in the larger context of the ancient world, the wife was expected to be faithful in the marriage, but the husband wasn't held to that same standard. You know, if you were with us last week, we told the story of the woman caught in the act of adultery. Well, it was notable, wasn't it, that only the woman was there. What happened to the guy who was caught in the act of adultery? Well, she's put on display, but he's not. This is the historical context into which Jesus is teaching. But this isn't God's desire. This isn't God's heart. This isn't God's plan. This is twisting. I'll give you another example. If a husband divorced his wife, but did not give her a certificate of divorce, then she wasn't free to remarry, which put her in limbo that was almost a death sentence for her, since at this time it was extremely difficult for women to be financially independent on their own. This was a broken, broken system. And into that broken, broken system, Jesus is teaching. And so what he does is he gives us guardrails. So what I'm trying to do is reframe, genuinely, historically reframe these first two verses in a way that helps us to see their goodness and Jesus' wonderful, loving heart. See, Jesus is giving loving guardrails. Let me point out two. Guardrail number one, the certificate of divorce. This protects women by giving them the right to remarry. Having a divorce certificate, and by the way, this was a law given by God through Moses in the Old Testament. So it was Moses who commanded a certificate of divorce must be granted, which then avoids the impossible scenario where the woman's left in limbo. This protects the wife. Guardrail number two, divorce restrictions. And again, this gets to the heart of what Jesus is saying here in Matthew 5. But I tell you, everyone who divorces his wife, except for in the cases of sexual immorality, causes her to commit adultery. Now, you might say, well, hey, why is Jesus singling out the woman here for marital unfaithfulness. What about the husband? Is Jesus being sexist? Right? So again, you got to consider the historical context. Jesus speaking to people in a society where it is far and away the most common situation for husbands to divorce their wives. Like, every once in a while, you might hear of a situation where a wife divorced the husband, but it almost never happens. And so Jesus is speaking here because the problem wasn't wives divorcing, it was the problem were men divorcing their husband for whatever, for their wife, sorry, men divorcing their wives for whatever reason they wanted to. And so he's speaking into that problem, and he's saying, men, stop, stop. This is not allowed. You are abusing Moses' commands and twisting the will of God. Jesus says, you may not divorce your wife for any reason, only in the case when she breaks the marriage vows due to infidelity. And of course, this applies to the man as well. All right, if a man is unfaithful, then the wife has biblical grounds for divorce. So where does that leave us? Here's the takeaway. God's loving design is for marriage to be a lifelong covenant, a committed relationship that promotes our flourishing and enjoyment of life. And yet, Jesus knows that in a sinful and broken world, divorce will be a reality. And so he put loving restriction, loving guardrails on divorce. And he offers compassionate forgiveness and hope for those who have suffered through a difficult divorce. The same God, the same Jesus who gives these parameters, gives these guidelines, gives these rules, gives these restrictions, is the same Jesus who is showing compassion to the woman who's broke all the rules. You see, the holiness of Jesus and the love of Jesus in the way that he teaches. This is who our God is. Let me get to this other part. I promised you, I told you that this would be the shorter one. Let's talk about Jesus and oaths. So these are the last verses here. Again, you've heard that it was said to our ancestors, you must not break your oath, but you must keep your oath to the Lord. But I tell you, don't take an oath at all, either by heaven, because it is God's throne, or by earth, because it is footstool, or by Jerusalem, because it's the city of the great king. Do not swear by your head, because you can't make a single hair white or black, and let your yes be yes, and your no mean no. Anything more than this is from the evil one. All right, so here's the main point. There's a lot of things that you could kind of get you thrown off track in kind of what he's saying here. Here's the simple point. God's people must keep their word. Speak the truth. Follow through. There's a historical context here too. Some rabbis taught and some people practiced that depending on what you said when you swore an oath, you didn't necessarily have to do what you said. You didn't have to keep your word. For example, as long as you don't swear by the name of the Lord, then you're okay, right? It was kind of a workaround, right? Like a shortcut that kind of got you off of keeping your word, right? So again, as long as you don't swear by the oath, swear an oath by God's name, you weren't committed. And so some people, they would kind of get around it by saying, all right, well, I'm going to swear by heaven, right? That sounds formal. I mean, in a context where everyone believes in heaven, believes that God lives in heaven, it's like, well, I'm going to swear by heaven, but not God's name. Therefore, push comes to shove, I'm like, well, I didn't actually say the name of the Lord, so I'm good, all right? Or others would say, hey, I'm going to swear by earth, or I'm going to swear by Jerusalem, or I'm going to swear by your head. And that probably sounds weird, doesn't it? But the idea there was like, I'm going to swear by my head as if like, if I don't keep my you know, what I say, my head's going to get taken off. Like that's, I think that's the probably the reason why sometimes in the ancient Near East, they would swear by their head. To all of these people who were doing this, Jesus says, come on. that's my translation. Come on. Like that's ridiculous, right? It doesn't get you off of it. You're trying to avoid God in this earth. Swearing by heaven doesn't avoid God because that's where God lives, right? Jesus says. You know, swearing by earth doesn't avoid God because earth is God's footstool. He created it and he governs it, right? Swearing by Jerusalem doesn't get you out of the oath because Jerusalem is God's city. Even swearing by your head doesn't get you out of it because God created your head. He tells us later on that even the hairs on your head are numbered by God. Jesus is saying, come on. You're trying to get away from your oath by avoiding God's presence, but you can't because he's everywhere. This line of thought, right? Trying to get away with a lie or a broken promise by making excuses. Well, I didn't really swear by God's name. It kind of sounds childish. It kind of reminds me of a child cornered, right? Or caught in a lie. Well, actually, what happened was, well, technically what I did was, well, I didn't really do this thing, right? It's childish. Jesus treats it as childish. Jesus says, stop. Just stop. Rather than worry about how you say your vows, here's an idea. Just tell the truth. When you make a promise, keep it. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Our God is a God of truth. And he calls his children, his followers, to be like him. I tell you, don't take an oath at all, but let your yes be yes and your no be no. Here's the reality as we close. A faithful God calls for faithful people. A faithful God calls for faithful people. Y'all, our God is wonderfully faithful. Our God has made promises to us, and he keeps them always. Our God loves to take those who are hurting, and he makes promises. It's like, I will never leave you. I will always be here for you. I love to exalt the humble and humble the exalted. He makes these promises. He promises that anyone who believes in Jesus, confessing his sin and trusts Jesus as a Savior, will be forgiven. And for that person, there is no condemnation. There is no shame. There is only forgiveness. There's only welcome. For those who feel like they've been excluded in this world and exiled in this world and downcast and mistreated and dehumanized, to those people, Jesus says, you are mine. You have value. Not only did I create you with all of the value of the divine artist, but I also saved you. You are doubly cherished. God makes these promises to those who are hurting, to those who are outcast, to those who are vulnerable. He never breaks his promise. He promises that he will take the bad things that we experience in this life and he will work them for good. He promises that one day the bad will end. He tells us that he is going to prepare a place for us. And so when at the end of this life, whenever that may be, we will be face to face with God and all will be made new. So many promises that God gives to us, and he never breaks his promise. He's wonderfully faithful. And to his children, he calls us to be faithful too. He calls us to reflect his faithfulness in the way that we treat others. That's true in our families, in marriages, brothers, sisters, the way that we care for one another, faithfulness. It includes the way that we speak, right? When we say something, keep our word. God's a faithful God, and he calls for faithful people. The problem is, if you know yourself, you're not always faithful, are you? Right? Yeah, I was literally caught this morning, probably about 10 minutes before the service. I realized I broke my word. I told Leah that I would clear something out of here. All right, here's a story. So Karan and I, we got together. I'm not throwing you under the bus. I was the one who made the promise, not you. But Karan and I, we got this big Christmas tree that we're kind of decorating. We're kind of doing some promos for the Christmas Eve service. And so we did this thing with Pastor Tony from Christ Central, and we kind of do these promo videos. And so we had the big old Christmas tree just kind of standing right here, right in front of me. Like, you wouldn't be able to see me the way it was. And it was just sitting there, and we were kind of running short of time. So we left, and I was like, hey, don't worry about it. I'll clean it up later. So I promised Karan, I'll clean it up later. And then I texted Leah. I was like, hey, Leah, big Christmas tree in the sanctuary. Don't worry. I'll clean it up later. And y'all, I totally forgot. So she gets here on Sunday. Terrence is here. She's like, why is there this enormous Christmas tree right here? Point being, none of us are truly faithful to keep our word, to honor our commitments. And family, this is why we need Jesus. This is why we need Jesus. All the times we haven't kept our word, all the times when we have relational hurt, whether it's divorce, whether it's a broken relationship, whether there's relational distance because of something you have done or something's been done to you, this is why we need Jesus, y'all. This sermon is not a self-help sermon trying to teach you all the ways that you can be more faithful and have a better marriage. That's not it. The point of the sermon is to drive you to Jesus Christ and to show you how compassionate, how loving he is. He's the God who loves to pick up the hurting, the broken, and make them new. Let's pray.